When did you come to Australia?
1941.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start becoming interested in horticulture?
I'm not interested in horticulture. I'm a botanist. Uh-huh. And it was, but I like my garden and I'm interested in gardens, but I'm not interested in horticulture per se. I'm interested in the environment, and I'm a botanist, and when I was in here that this society was being founded, somebody put my name down without me even knowing. Yes.
Were you involved in the botany world very much at that time?
I'm a botanist. Mm,
and you were working as a botanist?
I've been working since all my working life. I've been in Melbourne University in Australia, and I'm still there as an associate professor.
Mm. Do you know why you became so interested in botany? Was it your family background?
No, because when I was six, my grandmother taught me I had scarlet fever, and she showed me how to press plants, and I've been ever in since then. And then I've studied botany. I've got this in Germany, and I was particularly interested in marine botany.
Mm. And was your grandmother very interested in botany too?
Not at all.
No.
Just a mother of eight children with a garden.
And it was something for you to do when you were ill?
No, I was recuperating.
Mm. Mm. When the society was formed,
I beg your pardon.
When the Garden History Society was formed, why do you think it was a good idea to have that society formed?
Oh, that was, I wasn't even there, but Professor Turner came back and said that he put my name down. And I said, what for? And he said, there was a group of people who had organized that. And I was at the time very involved with my work. And they all said, oh, you must join that. And then I joined it. And then I didn't have the time to go to any meeting. But then I went and, and then there was very soon the first outing, and that was to Tasmania. And I joined them there to go.
And with the outings, one of the main reasons why you've stayed being a member? Did you stay being a member because you enjoyed those sort of outings?
When I was called outings, we went to Tasmania and there were some lectures. I gave them some lectures. Well, it was a group of people. I got very good friendship out of it. I was going to tell you the episode, but if all that goes on record, I don't know how the friendship came about. I made a very good friendship there, yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you think in 1980 was a good time for the Garden Historical Society to be formed?
I don't know. No. I cannot judge that. Mm.
Did you have a particular interest in historic gardens by that time?
No. Yeah. But I'm essentially was writing on the history of botany. Mm. I got an Order of Australia for writing about it. Because I was the first who wrote the botanical lots of history has been written, but I approached it from a botanical point of view.
Mm. Mm. And so have you mostly been involved with the society for botanical reasons?
No, I was just a member of the society because I got involved and I was interested in what they were doing, but not for botanical reasons because they were essentially not doing botany. I was interested in the gardens and in the people who were there. I enjoyed going to Tasmania. That was my first trip. I had actually quite a funny episode. In the beginning, there were a group of... I didn't know who was in the society. And the only person who I would have known was Professor Turner, and he didn't come. He never came to anything. I've never seen him at anything afterwards. And I went to the waiting room for NSAID where we were flying. And I saw that there was a group of people standing together, and I realized that they were going the same way. So I walked to them and I said, "Are you going there and there?" And they said, "Yes, we are, but we are flying first class." So I turned the table. And I was a bit, and I'll tell you about it afterwards. They were very elitist, but I took a fight because A, did I look so poverty stricken, and but they were flying. I know exactly who it was. I told that not to Helen last night. And so I put my tail between my legs and said, "Oh, well, if they are like that, I better keep my thing." So I had a place in the plane, and I flew, and they flew first class, and I flew just ordinary class. I didn't know a single person on the plane. I said, "Oh, I'm going to find that horrible." And then we arrived, and there was a bus took us somewhere. And I sat down alone in the bus, and the seat next to me was empty. And a very nice lady came along, and one of the highlights, that was Alice Jeffrey, you have probably heard of her. And she said, I didn't know her, can I sit down? And I spent the rest of the 4 days with Alice Jeffrey, and it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Alice, and from that grew a very deep friendship, which I had to Alice till she died 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Helen told me last night to tell you about it. And it was wonderful because we did lots of things together. And Helen reminded me last night of the time when she saw Kitty Garn, who is also one of the early person in the Garden History Society, and Alice Jeffrey and me in a chairlift being lifted into an NSAID plane. And that when we went again to Tasmania, that must have been about 2 or 3 years later, when Kitty was almost paralyzed on her legs. And she could only go onto the plane if they pushed her there in a wheelchair. But that was impossible, and she was to be lifted. And she said she wouldn't go in that chairlift. She would make her nervous. So I said, "I'll come with you." And then Alice said that she will come too. And Helen told me last night that the first impression she had that these three older women, and she was quite young, were lifted in a chairlift, all three of them, into an NSAID plane. And that was really, when Alice Jeffrey sat next to me, it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And from then on, I went to all the outings, mm-hmm. and to all the trips, always with Alice Jeffrey and Kitty Garn, both of them are now dead. Mm. And Alice had a most wonderful garden. Have you heard about that?
No.
Here in Kew. Mm. And the developers have moved in. Mm.
Yes. Did she have an historic sort of garden?
Mm. Mm. She made it herself, but it was in many books. If you want to, you are bound to this horrible machine, I would take you, because the people work, both of them, who are in the house now, they've ruined most of the garden, they've taken out the trees. It was actually the garden which belonged to Sir MacFarlane Burnett. Oh. She bought that house. Mm. Yes. Mm. I would have liked it, but you're bound to this horrible machine. Mm.
In your opinion, did the society at the beginning have a particular purpose?
Yes, but it was very much a playground of, as somebody put it at the time, of the well-heeled. And it was very much, and Helen has brought quite a different wind to it for everybody, and working bees. At the time, it was really a very luxurious yes, I think it had a different direction as it has now than Helen has given it.
What was its direction then?
much more to enjoyment and to, well, outings where everybody could be, well, we always stayed in the best hotels and had dinners there, and it was quite different to it. Helen Page has changed the direction of the... I enjoyed it at the time, but my introduction to it, as I told you in my beginning, that was sort of... I can't explain it any better.
So its main purpose was...
Now Helen has made it into a working bee, helping old gardens. It's much more become a working society. It wasn't in the beginning at all.
So it's more just to enjoy historic gardens.
Yes.
Would they have any sort of philosophy?
They did not. Helen has much more pinpointed the mission. I didn't think in the beginning. At least it didn't stick out through to me.
Mm-hmm.
And also, didn't matter what, they asked me to give them a lecture. It didn't matter what I lectured on, as long as I lectured.
Mm.
Do you understand?
Mm.
Now it's almost much more to pinpoint.
Mm.
I'm not so interested whether they have different types of azaleas or gladioli or things, because I'm not really, as I told you before, interested in horticulture. I'm a botanist, and I'm a historical botanist.
Mm.
I'm very interested, for instance, in the French. The French are my main I work mostly on the French. The influence which, there were 10 exploring expeditions, French ones, which came to Australia, and the repercussions of those in Europe are tremendous.
Mm.
And that's just my sort of interest that I have. And the impression which the French took back, quite different to the English explorers. That's the sort of interest I have.
Mm. Do you think the society should have more of a focus on the early plants and the preservation of early plants?
That would be nice. That would be... I don't think it's... That's really not... They are interested in gardens, but they... if they would foster that, that would be nice. But they have not got the expertise to do it. I think that... I don't think that... I think the society has now got much more a purpose than it had in the beginning. It did not have a purpose.
And what do you think the purpose is now?
The purpose is now to help to resurrect and gardens, old gardens. Now, for instance, Helen Page has working bees working at Bishop's Court, a garden which was established in 1853. I mean, much more older gardens you will hardly find. You might find them in Western Australia, but not many in Victoria.
Mm.
I am not aware that there's any... Yes, there might be one or two in this. No, I'm not. I don't know which is the oldest garden in Melbourne. I don't think anybody has made any reconnaissance in that direction. I don't know. I'm very ignorant.
Going back to the early days of the society, apart from or after your trip to Tasmania, do you have any particularly memorable memories of outings or meeting?
Yes, lots. But one very nice item was Professor Stern came out here. I don't know if you're aware of. He is man, very famous botanist from England. And he went to Adelaide, but a few days before that, he came to Melbourne, and that's my clock. He was here, and I entertained him in my house. My husband was here, and I enjoyed that particular time when Professor Stern was here. Professor Stern was, I think, partly paid for by the garden history and by the Botanic Garden to come out here, and he gave several lectures. And he died 2 years ago, and I liked that outing particularly because we then went to Adelaide, and Adelaide was particularly a nice meeting. But and then there was a lovely meeting in Launceston, where we were really shown very nice gardens.
Why was the Adelaide one particularly interesting? Was it mostly because of Professor Stern?
Professor Stern, and I saw gardens which I hadn't seen before. Mm. And we had some very good lectures, although I don't remember the lectures. One of them was Stern. But the people who showed gardens knew their gardens and talked about them. Mm. It's no good looking at gardens when you don't know anything. If you thrust in the last minute a piece of paper telling you about the garden, I like an owner to introduce a garden. Mm. Yeah. Mm. And look at the person and say, I've done that, mm. or we have done that, or we found that. I think that's nice. Mm. I like talking to the owner. Because when I was active, don't forget that I'm now a spent force, but that I always like to meet the people. I met the people when I collected plants, or when I worked in an area, liking to see what's gone before and what do the people have to tell you. Hmm.
What was Professor Stern a professor of?
Oh, he's one of the most famous botanists ever was in England. He's written, I don't know how many books and articles. He was very knowledgeable in the history of botany, and he's wonderful. I mean, to talk about Professor Stern would fill a whole day. Yes, he's very famous. Mm-hmm. He edited very famous books. I can't move from here, but I'll show you. Just lovely book on Hooker. Do you know who Hooker was?
Yes.
Well, I go and get it. Mm-hmm. Oops. Is it working now?
Yes.
Poor you, I feel sorry for you. Very sorry.
Now, were you on any committees in your time in the society?
Never, never. I've never been asked to do anything, mm. only to give lectures. Mm.
Have you enjoyed giving lectures to the society?
Have you?
Have you enjoyed giving those lectures?
No, I'm always terrified. Oh. But I don't mind. I mean, I've talked about things I knew about. They probably wanted me to just wanted to fill an evening, probably. And they asked me, and Helen even asked me last night if I would still talk. And I said, no, I'm not talking anymore.
Did you get a good response when you did talk?
Yes, very, 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 very.
And what do you think your contribution to the society would be through giving talks, wouldn't it? Would that be your main contribution?
Yes, I don't think I was any good in anything otherwise.
What do you think your main contributions to botany have been?
Mine? Mm. Oh, worldwise or botany-wise or in what I did?
In brief, because obviously you've made a huge contribution.
To what?
To botany.
I was very interested. I started here. I worked first on penicillin, and then I started to work on algae, and I started the algae course in the marine course in Melbourne University. And since my retirement, and I can't use a microscope anymore, I'm writing on the history of botany, Australian history of botany, mm. or the botany in Australia. Mm.
going back to the society, do you think the society has fulfilled its main purpose?
It's doing a good purpose now. In the beginning, it was an elitist pleasure. It had no mission. Now Helen has given it a mission.
And what's that mission now?
To help and resurrect old gardens. She's very good, I think. And this is quite different to what it was before. Mm. You'd see the Royal Botanic Gardens' entire object is to make money, whereas the Garden History Society is to help gardens. Mm. Even with the money you do in a plant sale, they put it to purpose. Mm. Oh, my friend was just here. He is still here. She's just gone back to the nest. Eastern Rosella, look how beautiful. Mm. I'm so pleased that they come.
Would you have any ideas how the society could improve from now on?
No, I don't. I think I haven't been. I can't go to Tasmania because I would like to go, but they don't allow cars. And I can't go in a bus. Not that I can't go in a bus, but I hold everybody up because I'm slow. Mm.
Do you think it should broaden its range of interests apart from just...
No. No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. No. My only worry is that if Helen is not able to do any more or put... I think Helen is actually sacrificing herself to a great extent, that she's giving voluntarily so much work, and she can't earn on those days when she does all that, and I think it's wonderful that she does it, but I wonder if there's anybody who will help her or would voluntarily give up working hours where she could earn some money. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a pity. Mm.
What do you think of the journal? Is that a...
That has improved tremendously since Nina Kronis. Yeah. Tremendously. Mm.
In what ways has it improved?
Well, paper wise and the whole set out and also what she solicits and articles.
Do you think it's published often enough? Do you think that journal comes out often enough?
Yes, yes.
Going back to the very early tours you used to do, are there any gardens that stand out in your mind that you saw in the early days of the society?
It's so long that I've been. I enjoyed very much that first Tasmanian trip, and I was amazed. We toured from Hobart and then we re-embarked into some plane in the north, and I don't know if it was Launceston or so. And on midday, we were entertained by the archers. And the archers were very wealthy. And they had so many vintage and so many cars. And they entertained us in such a luscious way. One person tried to overdo the others. We had, in that whole group, quail for lunch. I know. And, it was really an elitist society at the time.
You talk about it being elitist. Are there, or have they found any early gardens that do not belong to wealthy people?
No, that's not true. They are to quite simple people. Lots.
And have those people become involved in the society, the ones with smaller gardens?
Oh, yes, yes.
Can you give any examples? Have you been to any?
My memory of names is very bad, but one I talked with Helen about it last night. The people have died now, and I went there myself, and because they wanted some help with their books, and I went with our librarian there in my car. That's near Ballarat. My memories. And don't forget, I'm 94.
And what was special about that place?
It was a lovely old garden, and there I have working bees in there now. Most of the people have died. It was the original garden. It has, oh, Helen would know, but I can't reach her by phone. Near Ballarat.
Mm. Do you know how old it was?
It was early this last century.
Mm. And these gardens, do they have plants, or did they have plants that aren't so common now?
There was a lovely garden near Ballarat. It's my
but a garden near Ballarat, and whether in these old gardens there are early plants that aren't so common now.
You want to know if I... Yes, there was... well, it was... There was a lovely flowering floribunda, male floribunda, and cut. Oh, that was a lovely garden. And the whole arrangement of... That garden history outing to Ballarat was really the one where I learned most, and I learned most and enjoyed most, because they had old gardens and I saw plants which one wouldn't see today, and I can't... Oh, it was a lovely, lovely outing. Enjoyed it very much, because they showed the old plants. It was very good outing.
Why are those plants not so common now?
Well, people have huge roses, pink roses, want lilac roses. They wear the plants. You see, what people do nowadays, they think if they have an old garden, plant modern plants. They shouldn't do that. I wouldn't like to say that to Helen. They should have the cultivars which were in 1880, if they have an 1880s garden. Mm-hmm. And it's the only one in England they do this, but here I have never seen a girl. I mean, they plant a modern rose, which is very wrong. If you have one of these modern cultivars in an old garden, it's quite... That's one of the big criticisms which was made about some of the English television shows, that they showed modern cultivar roses in an old, I think it was a Jane Austen garden. You can't do that.
Mm. Is that something you think the Garden History Society could encourage?
They should encourage to grow the old cultivars. They should grow the old apple trees and not put in modern roses.
Mm. But would that be very difficult? Would it be very difficult to grow those early cultivars?
No, it wouldn't. Would mean that you can't, but now they're planting modern plants, and it should be planted with plants which they had in 1850, and we should try. If that's one of the things, I don't want to say that to Helen, because I think Helen is doing enough, but they shouldn't plant in those gardens modern varieties. They should try and find the old ones, and they can, because they are in Australia, and if not, you can import them from England.
Mm. Is there anything else you think the Garden History Society could become involved with that it hasn't in the past?
Well, I think that making sure that old cultivars of the period... I mean, if you have an 1853 garden and you plant modern roses, it's quite incongruous, in my opinion.
Mm. That's a matter of education, isn't it?
No, it's not a matter of education. It's a matter of pound, shilling and pence.
Mm. In the future, can you think of any other ways that Garden Historical Society could broaden its interests?
I think that cultivation of the old plants which belong to the period is one of the prime things I would, if it's a matter of, as I said before, of money. But I think that the aim which Helen has put in is so wonderful. I think one of the aims should be that Helen doesn't sacrifice, that she should find other people. And if other people aren't there, there should be some money made available that she gets more help, that she doesn't do everything herself. Mm. I don't want her to be sacrificed.
Mm. Have you noticed whether there is more of a bias towards interest in city gardens as opposed to country gardens?
I don't know. I couldn't judge. Mm. I couldn't judge. Mm.
The only other thing I'd like to ask is if you have any particular memories of anything that stand out in your relationship with the Historical Society.
No, I don't. And that I enjoyed in my time very much the Ballarat excursion. That I told you what happened in the beginning when I first went. And I have always enjoyed it. You see, I'm now so old, I can't drive anymore, I can't go, so I can't judge things. All I could say is that for the hours I've spent with them, I was always very grateful and they were always very friendly. And the snootiness, which I was frightened of in the beginning, broke down when they realized who I was. I mean, they didn't know at the time I was Dr. Tucker. Mm-hmm. They just thought, you know, there was this old woman coming up to them, but we are traveling first class. It annoyed me very much. And that was the attitude. And that's not anymore. Helen has broken it down. Helen, in my opinion, should get a golden medal.
So do you think it has a bright future with a large membership?
No, I don't. I don't. Because it hasn't got a bright future. To begin with, Helen can't go on like that. She's not any more the youngest. And unless people step into her shoes and take it on, let her be ill. Mm. Now she goes to every working bee herself. There's nobody else who does it for her. Mm. There's nobody who says, now you have a weekend off. Mm. I mean, I asked her to go to a lecture with me or something, I forgot what it was. Oh no, she said, I have arranged a working bee in Bishop's Court, I have to go. That's impossible. And she's running a one-man show. Everything falls back on Helen. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it hasn't got a bright future.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't got anybody who, if there would be three or four people, you see, they're paying you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nobody else.
Mm.
And I know somebody who grows some plants. Well, that's all. Just because they have so many. There's nobody who says, Helen, stay home. Or go to Timbuktu.
Mm.
I need the working bee.
Mm.
That's why I don't think it has a bright future.
Mm. It needs younger people to be encouraged to come into it, doesn't it?
Yes, but they are all so selfish nowadays. Not many people are so effacing as Helen is.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Ducker.
I hope you have a notebook to write some of these things down, because otherwise I have to keep on repeating them. I want to talk now first about Alice Jeffrey. Alistair Jeffrey was born on the 3rd of May 1911 in Narromine in New South Wales. And she, her father was a grazier, and he moved about a lot from the Riverina to northeastern Victoria. And Ellis was educated at MLC, and when she was about 22 years old, she went to Burnley. I don't think her life has been recorded. I think what I'm doing now is the first record of her life. And she went to Burnley, and her mother died when she was 18. And at 20, when she was about 2 years, 22, she went to Burnley. She worked for some time in a nursery in Riversdale Road. I think it was called this, Here's Your Tea, your Silver Birch Nursery. And then she surfaced, so to say, to the general public, I don't know, till she worked at Como with Dame Elizabeth, and she had a good friendship with Elizabeth. Kitty Garn she knew for a long time. Kitty Garn was born as a Miss Blackburn and married Mr. Garn. And there are a few little things which were not right. I'm a senior research associate at Melbourne University, mm-hmm. on page number one. On page number two, Alice is spelled A-L-I-C-E, oh. and Jeffrey is G-E-F-F-E-R-Y. Mm-hmm. So McFarlane Burnett has only got one T. And we maybe went up in the bus, in the plane that was in Canberra, which was in page number two. There's nothing, no correction on page number three. Page number four, the person who is now running the journal is called Nina Krohn, the new editor, which is still very good. That's on page number four. And on page number five, the Ballarat, the place which I was talking about and couldn't remember the name, was a people called Watkins, and the place is called Belmont, and they are really working there now as a garden. As a garden group working there as a bee. On page six, we start the second section. Really concerns mostly Alice Jeffery, and I have corrected that. She, as I've said before, her life had not been recorded before, and I think that this is why I really would like to talk to you, why I think she was so important. When she was 22, she went to Burnley. At Burnley, she met a woman, which is very important, which was called Joan Anderson, which developed into a lifelong friendship. And Joan Anderson and Alice worked jointly in many Victorian gardens. I have said in the earlier interview that she worked in a nursery in Riversdale Road, and that is only my assumption. I have no proof of it. She did work in a nursery. But we are not certain that it is true that she worked in the Silver Nursery. That is only from hearsay. I was also told that she developed a lifelong friendship with Grace Fraser, whom you will also interview, won't you?
Don't know her. No.
And that they did the planting at the Hermitage. Mm-hmm. Have you been told about the Hermitage?
No, the school.
No.
No.
This is a place which is on the Acheron Highway where these women, these gardener women, apparently met. Don't you know nothing about it?
No.
I didn't know really till last Saturday that they regularly or met there. They went there. They were apparently involved. John Anderson, Grace Fraser, Alice Jeffrey, and there was, I mentioned somebody else before. Anyhow, these were, they are the nucleus of the, you know what I mean by nucleus, mm-hmm. of the Garden History Society. You better find that out.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the Hermitage was quite important mm-hmm. because they did, there was, I didn't have never seen it. It is a guest house which is up on the Acheron Highway, and these women planted that. I don't know anything about it. You haven't been told about it.
No.
Well, I didn't know either. I only heard it on Saturday.
Mm.
Alice was then asked, apparently, by Professor Turner to take on the garden, get some gardening at Como when Como was established. Did you know about that?
I've been to Como.
Yes. Mm. And it is there that she also met Dame Elizabeth Murdoch. And then they became friends. Alice had a lifelong friendship with a woman called Kitty Garb, who was also a member of the Garden History Society. Kitty Garn was born a Miss Mitchell. I didn't know that last time. I said to you it was Blackburn. That's a mistake.
Mm.
It's Mitchell. Kitty was a war widow and started the War Widows Guild and was the not the receptionist, but the person who organized it all.
Mm.
Till on the first garden history outing, she actually had this accident that she became, that stroke, that became paralyzed.
Oh, yeah. Was it a car accident?
No, she had just a stroke. Oh. Like anybody can have a stroke when they're, and that's why she was. It's not true that the garden, which I have said here, is now ruined by developers, but a woman from the Lyceum Club has actually bought the garden, and she's trying to resurrect it to the glory of Alice. But she has taken out both the trees which were in and which were already in the Burnett's garden and which were the main feature of the garden, so she can never restore it to it. The other thing I wanted to tell you is that I definitely think that if you wanted to know more about the garden history, and much more than I could tell you, is to talk to somebody called Grace Fraser. Are you seeing her?
No. Mm-hmm.
And her telephone number is 9787-2705.
Mm-hmm.
You should really also speak to Flora MacDonald, but Flora MacDonald is very hard to get hold of because she is totally blind.
Mm-hmm.
Who is really running this?
Wendy Dwyer,
well,
who's a friend of Helen's, and she's on the Garden History Society committee.
Mm.
So she's the one who organises the people for me to go and see. She sends out that letter,
mm.
and I've told her about Flora MacDonald, But she hasn't got back to me about whether she's tracked her down.
Well.
But I've got Flora McDonald's phone number. But I think Wendy would rather... It's better that Wendy rings or Helen, not me. So I have to leave it up to them.
It's no good writing to Flora. She's totally blind.
Now, I told Wendy that. So I rang Wendy again at the weekend and reminded her that Flora sounded like she should be someone I should be seeing. I spoke to Wendy again on the weekend to remind her about Flora, and hopefully she'll be able to find her.
Coming back to Alice Jeffrey, one of the features of Alice Jeffrey was that when we had outings with the Garden History Society, everybody cottoned on to Alice Jeffrey immediately, wherever she went, because everybody realized that Alice Jeffrey knew all the plants, and then asked her. You see, people are, there's only generally one or two leaders, and so it was very opportune for everybody that they were able to have an additional person who could help. Alice, I'm coming back to Alice because after all we were really doing Alice last time, and I think she was very important. Alice prided herself in knowing all the plants, and she openly showed that she did that. And I've also found out that when she talked on 3DB, I gave you the person who actually is called Hammond, H-A-M-M-O-N-T, I wrote it in here.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked then also about landscape design, which I negated last time I spoke to you, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to see. Alice actually made landscape designs herself, too.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that Kitty Gahn lived in the oldest house in Kew. That was a round, fully imported 1850s house.
Mm.
Oh, you know that?
You told me that, yes.
Did I tell you that it has been dismantled?
Mm.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't read it here. Is it in here?
Yes, yes. Must be on the last page.
I haven't got that.
You said it was prefabricated.
Yes, in England.
Yes.
And that the house was bought by the Vesey Housing Trust. Did I tell you that?
No.
And that she had that because she was the first war widow who joined war widows of the War Widows Trust.
Mm.
There must be one more page.
Mm.
Have you got page 9?
Yes, you're talking more about the various trips on page 9.
Oh, do you want to have the birthday of Kitty?
Mm.
It's the 7th of March 1912, and she was born in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And she was mostly, I was told that by her cousin, interested in decorative art. And she did a lot of weaving and embroidery. And She also collected, which I didn't know, garden designs.
Yeah, right.
I know that's the sort of thing I want. It's really, I don't want anything. I haven't got anything more. I hope I have fought you on the under false pretenses.
Oh, no, no. But I'd like to ask you why you thought Flora MacDonald was so important.
Because Flora MacDonald was important, A, because she was very friendly with Alice.
Mm.
I think she trained with Alice. I'm not quite certain. I think she did.
Mm.
And also she knew a lot. And she used to work, if, don't let me get that wrong, because my memory is now not anymore so good. I think she worked at Melbourne University. Yes, she gardened there.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked at other important gardens.
And what about Grace Fraser, was it?
Yes, Grace Fraser. Yes.
Why was she important?
Grace Fraser is important because she trained with Alice. And Grace Fraser was very much a leading spirit at Como. And also, there was a very important garden designer in Melbourne called John Stevens. Have you heard of him?
No.
And he worked with her. And he still lives up in the Dandenongs. He should really be interviewed at some stage. And they always harp back to Grace Fraser's idea, and Grace Fraser planted that. So Grace Fraser is, for them, sort of the oracle.
Mm. And she was busy in the society? Do you remember her going on various trips?
Never.
No?
Only once I met her, and that had nothing to... Yes, I met her once on a trip, yes.
So she was a member?
Yes.
That's right. And Flora MacDonald was a member for quite a while?
I remember her once.
Mm.
Mm. Once.
Anyway, once she was blind, it would have been very difficult to be an active member, wouldn't it?
Mm. Mm. But she recognised me immediately because of my accent.
Yes. Yes, well, probably got excellent hearing. Now, one person I haven't heard much about from anyone is Joan Law Smith. Did you know her well?
Yes, she's mentioned. She is the woman who put me off, do you remember? I only found that name.
Oh, was that her?
Yes. Who said to me, but we're going first class. I have to take that out. I don't want to leave that in. Yes.
Well, you can leave it in without the name, can't you?
Yes, yes. Please, yes.
Yes, that's right.
That's how she was.
Yes. Oh, well, that's fine. Okay.
These people, what do you want to know about her?
Oh, just what she did for the society. Hmm. Wasn't she president for a while?
Yes. Why?
Hmm.
Not the hands-on, like... was she president?
She took over from Dame Elizabeth.
Hmm? Yes. Well, I think... Can that be off the record? I think they like having a... Well, Alice Jeffrey wanted it. Because she went twice to England to do the English garden tours. Once organised from England and once organised from here. And when and she then said, we must have something like that here. Idea of treatment of their homesickness.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they imported here all these terrible beasts like rabbits and blackbirds,
mm-hmm.
because they got them in here for homesickness.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to hear a blackbird. And then we have got the menace. I mean, when Harvey was here in 1853, in the period I'm working, they had huge cherry orchards down at the Yarra, Bend now, where we couldn't grow a cherry tree now. If you tried, because we have got all this European vermin here. Why have we got it? Because people were homesick for rabbits, for blackbirds, for sparrows, and brought them here.
Mm.
And that's the thing. That's why they wanted English gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's absolutely time that we liberated ourselves from the attachment to the European. I mean, I don't come from England, but I come from the same temperate climate. I mean, essentially, it's the same sort of vegetation, not much different between England. I mean, you call it English, I call it European, mm-hmm. because it's just the same vegetation. It's only until it becomes Mediterranean. And we must just liberate us and see we are now in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important that even the Garden History Society doesn't go back only to the English garden or to the European garden. It's Australia, and we have a history which is now 150 or 200 years old. We must go back to the early Australian gardens. I think that's very important.
Are there any early Australian sort of gardens with Australian
plants?
Very
much so.
Mm.
I mean, look at what do you think they did in London, I say, in Sydney when they first came? Wonderful.
Mm. With native plants?
No, not native plants. Mm. They brought back their own plants.
Mm.
But it is important what they did bring and how much they did use the environment. There is a... there's a book on early Australian gardens. Australian in Australian underlined. We must not look only back to one particular type of garden, that is the English garden. We must look back to all the roots, because Australia is now a multi-nation. I don't like multicultural, but I mean, there are many nations here, and we must look at all of them. I think it's, otherwise we'll never become uniform as really Australians. I find that very important.
So when you're talking about an early Australian garden, you still mean one with European plants?
Yes, yes. Mm. But because they only did that.
Mm.
They didn't even know how to transplant the Australian plant. See, they weren't clever enough to say, look, this is native ground. Let's grow a house in it, in this, and have that as a garden. They didn't accept it because they were so homesick.
Mm.
Look at Governor La Trobe's cottage. I mean, how he put himself out and then planted, you know, all European plants. You call them English, I call them European, because he planted European plants.
Mm.
And when the American consul came, he planted all American trees around him.
Yeah. It's just natural, isn't it, I suppose? So although you're talking about early Australian gardens, the only Australian aspect about it is maybe the design a bit, or was the design, could you call that Australian in early, some of the early gardens?
Well, some of them were clever enough to leave some Australian plants. Mm. I mean, they accepted eucalypts pretty smartly because they knew that they needed them as a backdrop.
Mm.
Look how beautiful that the alley in Elizabeth Murdoch's drive is. I mean, how clever she made use of the Australian environment.
Mm.
And I think the first thing my husband did was that he said we had to have a center tree, and he wanted to plant an oak. And I said, no, we don't plant an oak tree. We are going to plant a gum tree. And this rounds my garden off. It gives me an Australian background. And I thought it was necessary.
It's beautiful. What sort of gum tree is it?
It's in the Armadale gum tree. I selected it because I wanted a white bole.
Mm.
But I was foolish not to take one which is indigenous here. But it so happened that a friend of mine had that growing in a little tube, and he gave it to me. My husband planted it in 67.
Mm.
Up till then, the fence was where the fence was further forward. That was sure land, but we incorporated in our thing because they said it doesn't matter where the sign is, it's still sure land behind there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.